Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch. This is the Scorebook Live Today podcast, a podcast about high school sports across the state of Washington. I'm Andy Bueller, a high school sports reporter, and with me, my colleague and pal, senior reporter Todd Millis. We're coming to you from social isolation to break down the top 10 most impactful players across this past basketball season, both on the boys and girls side. Todd, how you doing? Thanks for taking the time. How are you coping with social isolation at this point?
You know, I get around. You know, I've gotten out before the governor kind of made the stay at home mandate. You know, I got down to the ocean. We taped there down there from now on there last week. And I've gotten prepared for just sort of being at the house. I have you know, some family to take care of. I got a couple pets to take care of. I got a lot of work to take care of. So, you know, I'm staying busy. I know this is sort of the first, you know, week and a half into this. So, you know, you might want to check in with me in mid-April when I turn, you know, right around my 49th birthday to see how I'm doing. I might be a little grumpier than I am today.
Hey, as long as those pets are taken care of, that's the saving grace here.
Yeah, and I'm expecting Conan to, I have a Shiba Inu Corgi, he's 11, a very interesting mixed dog that does show up on our podcast on occasion with some barking in the background, so that is him. He's usually barking at me on some, you know, misstep in our rankings or, you know, a prediction that I made, so I think he would easily be sort of a Central Valley girls basketball mascot the way he barks at me on all the screw-ups I've had all year.
If Conan had imposable thumbs, he would be like the most annoying like Facebook comment section reply guy that we've seen.
Yeah, if Conan had a Facebook account, could get on a computer, I have no doubt that, you know, among the three of us, you know, us two and Reagan, our social media director, I think he would drive us all batty. But fortunately, you know, he doesn't have a Facebook account, and he likes his dog food too much to try and figure all that stuff out. So,
well, he's among the population of at home pets that are the real winners of this coronavirus social isolation that we're going through, that's shut down schools and halted high school sports, as pets now get all the attention in the world. So shout out to all the pets out there. Shout out to Conan, friend of the podcast. But we're here today to touch on something that we would be doing regardless of whether this was all going on, is breaking down the top 50 most impactful high school basketball players on both the boys and the girls' sides. They are postseason lists that at Scorebook Live, by the time this podcast is published, the boys' list should be out. The girls will shortly follow. But it's something that at Scorebook Live Washington we've done. We did it in the football season with 100 players to watch going into the year, unranked. And then at the end of the season, we ranked them 1 through 100. And we did the same thing for basketball, but with 50 players. And honestly, 50 is a really tough number. I mean, there's so many good players across the state, so many players across all classifications that had just fantastic seasons. And I don't know about you, but it was really hard to narrow it down to 50.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I think we could easily fill out a top 75 if we had to, but we have to cut it off sooner or later. But you and I both have experience with these sort of things on the newspaper side. And I tell people all the time, when I did an all area football team or an all area basketball team or an all area soccer team or softball team, that don't necessarily look at this as an all-star team based solely on numbers. This is supposed to be sort of a snapshot of how the season went out. And I think that's one reason why you and I both value team success is, you know, heavily into the criteria. I think, you know, it's easy for players when their teams aren't playing for much to just kind of freewheel and kind of, you know, I'm not saying every kid on a losing team, you know, just goes for it. But I think in more meaningful games, when you're playing within the team concept and your main goal is to win a game, I think those players, you know, you should value that particular part of it as much as anything. And I think that's kind of what you and I both have aimed to do in these top 50s, and hopefully, you know, we've succeeded for the most part.
Yeah, and you as the girls basketball beat writer at Scorebook Live, you and former Central Valley coach and a great basketball mind, Freddie Rico, kind of melded minds to make the girls list. I did so. I did the same with Dan Dickow, who is not on the podcast today, but I'd be remiss to mention that he's doing a special podcast series, releasing a new interview every day on this very podcast feed, with an expert in their field that is specifically tailored to whether you're an athlete, whether you're a parent, whether you're really anyone, how to navigate this these uncharted times in kind of the scope of sports, the scope of physical fitness, the scope of mental well-being. So keep an eye on the podcast feed for those new interviews. Really, really looking forward to those that are to come. But Dan and I conjoined minds on the boys list, and that was something that we talked about quite a bit, was how much are we going to value team success, and how much of a factor is that in relation to, you know, some players are standouts on a team that just maybe didn't make the state tournament, and maybe there are certain areas of the state that, you know, if a player you could reasonably played moved to a different area, they would have, you know, competed on a team that would have had a better shot at the state tournament, players in lower classifications. Those were all things that we kind of factored in. But one thing, as we kind of outlined the criteria for these lists before, Todd, you and I kind of go count down from 10 and dive into our top 10, is we approach these lists as high school sports reporters. This is not a recruiting list. We did not judge the talent and rank the talent based on a player's ceiling. We did it on impact. Who were the most impactful players across the state this season, across all classifications? So without further ado, do you want to start with number 10 on your list?
Yeah, I mean, again, and let me reiterate this, there were 7 or 8 players that could easily are interchangeable from I value from 17 up, and but I had to, you know, I had to cut it off at 10, and the young lady that I picked at 10 was maybe the most impressive defensive guard I've seen in the state. She dominates in transition. She really dominates on one end of the floor defensively, and her name is Aaliyah Collins, the point guard at Glacier Peak. She was the 4A Wesco Player of the Year last year. I think she was the runner-up in that voting this year to Reagan Reed of Lake Stevens. Not an offensive juggernaut-type player. I mean, if there's one thing that she really needs to work on her game, it's developing an outside shot. And I know, you know, from her ninth grade year to now, that has improved dramatically. But it's something that she needs to show a little more confidence and comfort with. But I'll tell you something. The way that she has controlled some of the best point guards in the state, you could Reagan Reed, Talia Von Olefin in the state tournament. She just terrorizes people with those hands. She just seems to know where guards are going before they do, and she gets in great position and has a knack of just sort of swatting the basketball away and going the other way and getting a bucket or getting an easy pass to a teammate. And she really kind of leads this Glacier Peak team, which I expect to be a huge factor in 4A next year, with that group being primarily all seniors.
Yeah, I watched her. I think it was in the state quarterfinals when they played Chiawana, and that was a fun matchup between, you know, watching one of the state's best, if not the state's best, on-ball defending guard take on a 5-star guard in Talia Von Olhoffen. And she really limited what Talia was able to do in a way that not a lot of players were throughout the season. So I really like that pick. I especially like it because she's coming back next year. That's a good thing for high school sports fans, a good thing for that Glacier Peak squad. So starting off at number 10 on the boys' side, we have Jackson Grant, center from Olympia, 6'10", junior, helped Olympia to a fourth place state finish. He's a University of Washington commit. He averaged 17 points and 11 boards on the season, established himself among the state's top centers. When Grant was on, he's pretty much unstoppable. I mean, it's physically, there just aren't a ton of players like him in this state. He's got great size. He can shoot. He can stretch the floor on the outside of the perimeter. I didn't see a ton of that at the state tournament, him stretching the floor. I didn't see a ton of pick and pop. But it's clear when you see him out there, the types of matchup challenges that he presents, and another guy that as a junior, the future's bright for him. So he'll be coming back next year, in a really strong 2021 class. So Jackson Grant, rounds it out at number 10. That was an Olympia team that had a strong finish to the season, to finish fourth in state.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I'll just touch briefly on a couple of guys that I've seen, and this is a young man that I've seen a lot play a lot over the last couple of years, and had a huge buzz, you know, when the summer was out with playing with Washington Supreme. Very, very skilled player. He's probably going to be a trailer four or a wing somewhere down the line, but a guy that can also post up. But like I said, he's very skilled. He's a good passer. He's got good vision. Maybe didn't have the monster year that maybe we all sort of forecasted, but, you know, he gets another year next year. You know, we said he's committed to the UW and a very, very skilled basketball player. Does things at 6'10 that we don't see a lot of. Number 9 on the girls' side, and again, this could have gone to a lot of different players, but the way that Beamer, Beamer was one of the, I think, one of the surprise teams in 4A. Not that it's necessarily a surprise because of their track record. You know, 5-6 years ago, Corey Alexander had a group that was consistently advancing to the state quarterfinals, had a great court state semifinal game, losing to Gonzaga Prep. Maybe the best state tournament girls game I've ever seen. But Aaliyah Alexander, his youngest daughter, is a combination of size and speed, quickness, and strength that you just don't see a whole lot of at the high school level. I mean, she just physically is stronger than most off guards and wings that you see, and she gives it she gives a great effort on both ends. She's not, I wouldn't say she's a great scorer, but I mean, if you had to kind of measure her game across the board, she would be a 7 or 8 in a lot of different areas. She's a good slasher. She's an okay shooter, but she's so strong and she can control opposing guards a lot on both ends just with her strength. And I like her game. I think she's a little more basketball savvy than her older sister, Nia. I covered her older sister quite a lot, a lot in when she was in high school. What a great year for Beamer. Gave Woodinville a pretty good game there in the state tournaments, and really as the year went on, they just continued to get better and better. Obviously, one of Corey's better teams in his coaching career at Beamer, and Aaliyah Alexander is a big reason why.
I saw her in the district finals, the District 3-4 finals against Union. Union had them by, they were up, Union was up about 8. 8 or so, 8, 9 at halftime, and had to that point done a pretty good job containing Alexander. And Alexander just turned it on in the fourth quarter in a way that Union wasn't even able to stop. And Beamer came back and won that game. And it was a really impressive showing of just a player that was able to utilize their offensive toolkit to just take over a game. You love to see it. I like that pick at number 9. On the boys' side, number 9. Nobody's going to argue why this player is a top 10 player on this list. Just a tremendous, tremendous season, senior season from Liam Lloyd at Gonzaga Prep. 6'6", shooting guard. He, you know, played both guard positions. He did a little bit of everything for the Bullpups this year, and This is a Gonzaga prep team that lost, I think, the other four starters from a defending state champion. They were the two-time defending state champs. They, of course, lose Mr. Basketball and Anton Watson, who goes to Gonzaga. Liam Lloyd is called upon to really make this his team. As Matty McIntyre, head coach, said, this team is will go as far as Liam takes us. And he really not only stepped up as the scorer that we saw flashes of in years past, but just the leader that that he became was really impressive. I mean, they you know, he started the season with a more than 40-point, I think it was like a 42-point game or 43-point game. I'm getting the exact points wrong, but he scored in the 40s the first game of the season in a loss to Central Valley. And the team didn't really know how to play with one another yet, and you saw throughout the season that he learned how to lead, he learned how to play with the other players, and really kind of empower the locker room, empower different players to step up around him. And so, you know, Gonzaga Prep, even though they lose Lloyd, like with the way that a lot of those guys that he uplifted throughout the season, Gonzaga Prep's got to be happy with what it brings back next year. So Lloyd takes, he's a Grand Canyon commit, son of Gonzaga assistant coach Tommy Lloyd. He takes Gonzaga Prep to the state tournament. They lose on a really close game in a buzzer beater, or not a buzzer beater, but a last minute shot to Sumner in a great first round game, and perhaps the best individual game of the 3A 4A state tournament. And I think just the biggest bummer about Lloyd's senior season is just that it had to end the way it did, because they were playing really well. He was playing really well. He had a shot to win it at the buzzer against Sumner. An open three, pump fake, shook two defenders and got open for a shot that just didn't fall. But just a terrific senior season from Liam Lloyd. It was really fun to watch, and no doubt that Grand Canyon's happy with who they've got.
Yeah, I mean, the two questions I think he needed to answer, and I haven't watched him a whole lot. I know he plays for Carl Howell with the Washington Supreme. I did watch him a little bit last year, watched him at the WIBCA Showcase in Bellevue. But I know the two questions that he had to answer entering his senior year was, can you go from being a Robin to a Batman, being that number one guy? Not everybody can do it. I think he showcased that he could, that he was a good team leader, that he could kind of carry the mail, so to speak. And the other part was, you know, we all know he can shoot the basketball. He might be able to shoot the basketball as well as anybody in the state, but can you do the other things consistently to be a well-rounded player? And I think you alluded to this, Andy, that, you know, I think he's a better passer than people thought. We know that he could play defense too. I mean, he's a scrapper. I mean, you saw that in the two state championship runs that Gonzaga Prep had heading into this season. So I think he answered the two biggest questions he needed to. A fantastic player. And I tell you, what a run that Gonzaga Prep. It's hard to win back-to-back state championships and to get that group back to a state tournament. Matty McIntyre is one of the best basketball coaches in the state, no doubt about it. So on the girls' side at number 8, and this is where, you know, the criteria sort of needs to kind of come into full focus, because one of the things that we talked about was injuries. And it's hard to kind of know where some of these players on the list would have been if they would have stayed healthy. Now, like the young lady I had at number 8 was Jordan Jenkins. And you say, hey, she only played, you know, 8-9 games before, you know, blowing out her knee. But I'll tell you, if she had stayed healthy, and what I saw in the game prior to her injury, she could have been a number one or number two. She's that good. She'd started to expand her game, was starting to shoot a little more from 15, 18 feet, would occasionally shoot the three. So her game being, you know, starting out as sort of this bullish power forward post player as a ninth grader to kind of slowly coming out to the perimeter, you could kind of see the well-roundedness of her game as a senior. It's not that the power part of it had suffered at all. No, she was still dominating on the inside when she chose to be, but now she's starting to take some of the bigger players out and facing them up and going by them. I mean, she's just a phenomenal athlete. She's a phenomenal blend of strength and speed for how tall she was. I like her better than Delea Daniels. To me, she would have probably, if she'd stayed healthy, she probably would have been the number two pick for me in the state behind Haley Van Lith. And but who knows? I mean, you know, I watched her in a head-to-head matchup before she got hurt with Eastlake standout Keely Burton Oliver, and she was the best player on the floor, and it wasn't even close, to be honest with you. So unfortunately, she did get hurt. Kent Ridge, credit to them, without her kind of readjusting some things with a couple of their other pieces and getting back to the state tournament without her. But I watching her just kind of watch it from the end of the bench, it was tough on her. She's been a joy to watch. One of my favorite players that I've watched in girls basketball in 25 years, and now she's off to USC. Hopefully that knee heals up quickly and that she returns to being the dominant 3-4 that I think the Trojans expect her to be.
There's no comparison to her on the boys' side. There's nobody that made that much of an impact in just 8 games. So shout out to her. That's I like that pick. Zeroing in at number 8 on the boys' side is a player that plays at the 1A level, but anyone who followed him throughout the season watched him give buckets to whoever he came across, and he came across teams and talents from every classification. That's Tyler Linhart at Kings, state champion, MVP of the 1A state tournament, 6'7", sophomore, had about as good a sophomore campaign as anyone across the state did. He came up as a freshman and really came on as a gifted scorer around the rim, and somebody who really turned heads at the state tournament last year, making it to the state semifinals. Well, the most impressive part about Linhart was what he did in the off season, which you and I both wrote about this season, Todd, is that he cut 35 pounds. He was flipping tires. Coach Rick Skeen said that anything you see an NFL player doing to train and get their body right, Tyler was doing that to not only round out his skill set, but retool his body. And so he proved that he can score on all 3 levels. And again, like I said, you look at some of the teams that Kings played, and this is one of the reasons that we had Rick Skeen as our all-classification coach of the year, is the way that they scheduled. Tyler gave buckets to Mount Si. He gave buckets to Glacier Peak. I'm missing teams. They went down to California and struggled against some really, really good teams from out of state. And Tyler wasn't deterred. So Linhart is a guy who at the 1A level is about as fun to watch as anyone in the state, just from a scoring standpoint. Defensively, in his last couple years, his next couple years of high school, I think that's going to be where the biggest question mark is can he defend as he starts to project at a high Division I level, can he defend at that level? So Tyler Linhart, deserving number 8. Guy you saw average 21 and 12 in the Sun Dome, Todd. You like that pick at 8?
I mean, I've talked about this in previous podcasts. I am a big fan of Tyler Linhart. I probably watched him more than any boy play this year. Again, I was focused on the girls, but I just love his game. I love, you know, I saw him in the summer at the Curtis tournament when he was up at 235. He was just a little heavy, but you could tell he was skilled. And then to come back and shed the weight, and the times I saw him against Mount Si, I saw him in an overtime win against Seattle Academy, and an overtime win against Linden Christian. I mean, he just brings it. I mean, he is as clutch can be. You pair him with another really good sophomore in Hanson, and it's a great nucleus to build around. But in terms of potential ceiling, I just love the guy's game. I love the inside outside factor of it. I love he's skilled. I love his footwork. He's gonna get stronger. He's you alluded to his defense. He needs to be a better two-way player, but on the offensive end, in his ability to shoot the 3 and back people down, it didn't matter who people put on him. He was just dominant against 4A teams, 1A teams. Didn't matter, and he's only a sophomore.
Can we talk about how in that game against Mount Si at the King Classic at the Showwear Center, Mount Si had to take Tyler Patterson perhaps one of, if not the state's best perimeter defenders. They had to take him off of Linhart. I mean, and you were the one that watched it. Talked to you, talked to coach, both coaches. Like, that was about as impressive a performance as we saw all season.
Well, yeah, Jay Mullins was guarding him in the fourth quarter for a stretch there, but it just didn't matter. And he was smart enough to know, okay, you know, I've got a lighter guy. I'm going to back him down. I can take him to the perimeter. I mean, I think he was 11 of 13 or 12 of 14 from the floor, had 28 points. That day, in that particular game, he was the best player on the floor, and Kings did everything but win that game. So, I mean, you've asked me, I love this young man's game, and it's going to be fun to watch him the next 2 years. If you like small school basketball, I would strongly advise over the next 2 years to get out and watch this young man play. He is phenomenal.
No question. Absolutely. Todd, number 8, what's it going to be?
Well, no, we're at number 7. Seven. I was leading number off, 7. So, yeah, there we number go. Number 7. And again, this is kind of a salute to the second half of the season, because I watched Megan Fiso play a little bit in the first half, and I think she was sort of adjusting to a new team. She came, you know, she was the really talented scorer from West Seattle and transferred to Garfield in the offseason and to play her senior season next to Delia Daniels. And she just didn't look like she knew where to fit in and where to kind of take hers. And this was Delia's team, and how do I be a 1B to her 1A? And it just, you know, when you have new players and new pieces, it just takes a while. And Garfield is no exception to that. They struggled to kind of know what their rotations were going to be and stuff that first 2 months. But I'll tell you when Megan, and a lot of this had to do with Delia Daniels' injury. When Delia was coming off the bench and missed some time with the foot injury, Megan was kind of the alpha dog with that first unit. And I think that was the best thing that could have happened to Garfield, was it just sort of gave her the license to go get hers, because that's the kind of player she is. She's an aggressive scorer with a really good mid-range game, very savvy, strong. We'll get out and shoot the three. But, you know, the last 6 weeks, you know, she was as big a reason why Garfield got hot and was able to make a run and go win a 3A title as much as anybody. I'll admit, I've watched her, you know, a little bit last year in the first part. I was like, yeah, Michigan, really, really, Michigan. After I saw her a few times, the last 6 weeks, then I kind of saw it, you know. And she was the MVP of the tournament, and Garfield got that elusive state championship with that group. So I have Megan Fiso at number 7, the shooting, the really talented shooting guard from Garfield.
Number 7 on the boys' side. From here on out, none of these names are going to surprise you. Maybe the order will, and we'll kind of go through that. But number 7 is point guard at Eastside Catholic, junior Nolan Hickman. He established himself as one of the state's top point guards this season, and if you can classify Jay Mullins as a shooting guard because he played mostly off ball, I think it's fair to say that Nolan was the state's best point guard. He upped his scoring by like 10 points a game. He's shot 20% better from the field, and you watch him play, and as impressive as he is in the way that he elevated his game, a guy that's been on varsity since his freshman year, came in, grew up playing on a really vaunted Rotary team with Paolo Banchero, JT Tumalau, Shane Noel, a guy that felt like kind of amongst those guys that he was kind of waiting his turn, and that he's had that fire to prove to Seattle coming in that he was the best point guard in the area. And this year he showed that that across the state nobody was going to mess with him. He was my favorite part about Hickman, and I wrote a big story on him right before going into the 3A state tournament, was just some of the anecdotes around what type of competitor he is. One of the ways that Eastside coach Brent Merritt motivates his players is he'll be really hard on him, and he'll yell at him, and he'll tell him, he'll challenge him and tell him, you know, I don't think you can do this, I don't think you can do that, because he knows in his relationship with them that that's what they respond to. And so he said, Merritt has said that that there have been multiple times where he's told Nolan going into a game, "I don't think you can guard this guy." Nolan says, "I want him. Give me the best player. I want to guard whoever the best player is. I want to guard Jaden McDaniels. I want to guard Paolo Banchero. I want to guard whoever the best player is." And not necessarily with those guys, but there was a specific moment that Merritt recounted to me where Hickman was getting the best of a player that Merritt had told him that he couldn't guard before the game, and he turns to the coach in the middle of the game and just goes, "Coach, I thought you said this player can play. He can't play." And Merritt's saying, he's like, "I'm sitting there embarrassed because the kid's standing right there." But that's just the type of competitor that Nolan is. He's a guy that rises to the occasion, and they didn't get it done in the state tournament. They got embarrassed in the state semifinals, getting blown out by a Garfield team that, quite frankly, Nolan wasn't the best guard on the floor. Corin Johnson had a better game than him, and I think that's going to be a real determinant as to how Hickman comes into his senior season. Eastside Catholic's never won a state title, neither has Hickman, and so that's going to be a fun guy to watch coming back.
Yeah, I mean, you picked two players back to back that are arguably my two favorite players to watch all year. I watched this young man for the first time against Lincoln as a ninth grader and went, "Who is that guy?" Like, he stands out when you watch him. I think I've said this on the podcast before. When it comes to, you know, jitterbugging, the wiggle, the quickness, he's the closest thing to Jamal Crawford I've seen in the past, whatever, 20 years. The way he can just kind of get through traffic and just shake people. And quite frankly, embarrass people. I love the guy. He's got dog in him. I watched the Metro League tournament at Seattle Pacific when he dropped 34 or 35 in front of John Calipari. That day, he was the best player on the floor. I love this guy's game. I can't wait to see where he ends up. And the fact that he's still unsigned and not getting quite the buzz I thought he would, I'll tell you, this summer, I think we're going to hear a lot about this young man, and I think there are going to be a lot of schools in on this young man. This guy has got massive game. I love the guy's game.
Oh, he's going to blow up this summer. I mean, he already has offers from the UWs, the Oregon States, the Oklahoma, and those just that list is going to keep on building. So, Nolan Hickman at number 7. Todd, who you got at number 6 on the girls' side?
I've got also a junior, and I think the state's best pure scorer when you watch her as a natural scorer, and that's Talia Von Olafen. Now, not a lot of people on the west side might have seen her prior to the Tacoma Dome, and she didn't have her best game, obviously, against Glacier Peak. She's running the point at Chihuahua. She's probably going to be more of a natural wing in college, but you and I traveled over to the Tri-Cities. We made our one trip over there over 3 days and got a chance to see her play at home against a really good Kennewick team. And I had heard a lot about her as a scorer. And to watch her be able to just kind of naturally find ways to score on every part of the floor. I mean, she can post people up. She can beat double teams. She's got a good mid-range game. She can beat you off the dribble. She can shoot the three. I mean, she is just a nasty pure scorer, and she can handle the ball a little bit. I mean, she's a good enough ball handler to play point guard in high school, I think. But I mean, this was a young lady that I heard a lot about. First heard about from Carl Howell, the ex Tacoma Community College men's basketball coach, who had Brock Rave on his Washington Supreme team, and he was over watching Kittitas. And waiting for his senior night or one of their late season games. And I get this text from Carl. It says, "Oh, by the way, there's this young lady from Tri-City Preps. I don't know who she is, but she's the best girls basketball player I've seen in a long time." And I'm like, "Really?" And it was Talia Von Olafen. And then she ended up going and winning a state championship with that group before going to Chihuahua this year. You know, the thing I'd like to see from a team aspect is the game that we watched in particular is when you have a player like this that dominates the ball as much as she does, it's easy to kind of stand around and the movement gets stagnant. I think she, you know, in year two, you're going to probably see, you know, better cohesiveness with this group, with Delaney Pink and Talia and a couple other that are really young, talented players. I think this is a team that's going to be, you know, maybe fly under the radar with kind of the way they sort of fizzled at the end of the year, but you know, when you have a natural scorer and a couple other really good supportive pieces like Chihuahua does, this is a group that's certainly should be in the mix next year in a very, very deep 4A class.
I say this half jokingly, with the way that she passes the ball, watching her throw full court passes, like give JP Zamora some rest next year, and so, like she could play quarterback. She's got a legitimate arm, such a fun passer, and someone that again is on the growing list of players that are coming back next year that we're excited to see. So, at number six on the guys' side, just took his game as a sophomore and put the state on notice in a run to the 3A state championship game, finishing runner-up. That's Tyson Degenhart of Mount Spokane, who elevated his game to another level, showed that he could score at all three levels, hit the three ball when he needed to. We saw it against Eastside Catholic in the regional round when they really gave Eastside Catholic a game, sent him to OT, and Eastside just said, let's let Tyson shoot. You know, we've seen him take guys off the dribble. We've seen him do work down low, but he doesn't really shoot a lot of threes. And when they challenged him to do that, he did. And he really gave the Crusaders fits. Somebody who I saw Degenhart, and he wrote a player diary with us throughout the season. And just an awesome young man. But seeing him in January at the Leshwab Invitational's secondary tournament in Portland, outside of Portland, he was taking guards off the dribble as a 6'8 guy. You know, he's going to be a guy that I don't know where he's playing this summer. I heard from somebody, and Todd, correct me if I'm wrong, he could be playing with Washington Supreme this summer, but I hope that if he's playing AAU this summer, that he gets a chance to play some of the three, because he's committed to Boise State, and as a 6'8 junior, he's versatile enough to do that. So looking forward to seeing him continue to prove that and just add even another dimension to his game. But average 23 points, 8 boards, almost 3 assists. I'm sorry, I'm reading off of the wrong guy. He was over 25 points a game, though. And the Wildcats won the 3A Greater St. Helens League or Greater Spokane League title before being upset in the first round of the state tournament. So Tyson Degenhart at number six, he's a guy that I think there's genuine arguments that he could be higher.
Well, in terms of complete package, I mean, he's kind of Paulo Banchero light. He's just a little behind Paulo in some of those areas, like development of outside shot. He's just getting more comfortable as a junior shooting the three, whereas Paulo seems like he's a little more of a natural three-point shooter. He's a couple inches shorter. You know, he's, you know, not quite as big or as strong. But I tell you, when I watch him, he's got a lot of Paulo in him. I say that in the most complimentary way. I mean, this young man is a beast. I mean, he is skilled. I just, you know, this isn't the last we've heard from Degenhart. I don't think. I think Mount Spokane is going to be a team that we're gonna see a lot of next year. The fact that he's at Boise State, if he sticks with that commitment and signs with them in the early signing period, that is the absolute steal for the Broncos. You know, and again, sometimes in Spokane you kind of get lost, but he's made such an impression in Tacoma. I know they had the early exit this year against Seattle Prep, but when I watch him, he's the closest thing I've seen in the state to Paulo Banchero. Just a little light, though. Just a little light. I'm not saying he's Paulo, but just a little light. Well, now we get to our top five, man. And this has been fun. Our top five, you know, again, you could make cases that the order could be, you know, the 2 to 5 could be, you know, it could be rearranged. But my number five pick is Delea Daniels, the Cal commit, the 6'4 wing, you know, probably the most disruptive interior defender I've seen in the past 3 years. Now, she's probably a little lower because of her, you know, missing so much time with the foot injury. She was, you know, she was good. She was gone a good 5 weeks. But you saw the impact she had, just her presence returning right before the postseason and in the Metro League tournament, the Sea King tournament, and then obviously in the state championships. Now, you look at her numbers this year. Did she have a great senior year? No. But her presence alone allowed other players to kind of do other things. That's the kind of player she was. I mean, when you ask pretty much any coach in the Metro League, or you ask any coach in the Kinko, or teams that had to face him in the state, what is your number one what's the number one thing you have to worry about in your scouting report on both ends? And I can guarantee you, you know, in unanimously, it's Delia Daniels. She's that type of player. She plays with an edge. I mean, she would be, I'll tell you, if I were coaching against her, I would be yelling at the refs a lot about the way she plays. But she just kind of plays right there on the edge. But as a teammate, I'd love to have her as a teammate. She's not a prima donna. She likes that she'll dive on the floor. She'll swing an elbow. She'll hit a jumper. She'll block a shot. She'll tell you all about it. Really, one of the more animated players I've seen in the last 3 years. One of the all-time best players. If we made a top 25 or top 30 list of all-time players, she would certainly be in the conversation with that. A lot of fun to watch her play. You know, didn't have the great statistical senior year like she did as a junior, but presence alone, you know, she's easily a top five player, and if she hadn't gotten hurt, she would be even higher.
So with 5 and 4 on the boys' side, I'm going to loop those two together and throw us off a little bit, because I feel like that needs a little bit of explanation, because they're guys that come out of the same league and guys that were in the conversation, both of them, for league MVP in the Greater St. Helens League down in the Vancouver area. At number 5, I have Union guard 6'5", senior Tanner Toulson. Wibka's Mr. Basketball, averaged 23 points over, you know, 8.5 boards, 2.5 assists, 2.5 steals, led Union to an undefeated regular season, and ended up placing third at state. Toulson had one of the most impressive breakout seasons of anyone in the state, after kind of being the second option to Ethan Smith as a junior. But and then at number 4, I have Caden Perry of Battleground. He's a junior, 6'10", forward center, and his regular season numbers are just ridiculous. 23.7 points, 15.3 rebounds, 3.3 blocks per game. That's complete season, by the way, not regular season. The Gonzaga's got to be licking its chops just seeing the season that Caden had, you know, really carry them into the postseason. And that was the differentiator for me and Dickow, is that, you know, here's Caden, Caden and Tanner, both incredible seasons individually. Tanner, I felt like he won the MVP at the 4A Greater St. Helens League, and just in that league MVP meeting, you know, I think there probably should have been more of a case for Caden. I think Tanner, up to that point, probably had a better year. Caden finished strong, and just you watch him playing with Caden didn't have the supporting cast that Tanner did, and that really showed. You know, Manny Mello, the head coach of Battleground, said that they would essentially in practice, they would practice inbounding the ball with like 3-4 guys trying to deny Caden the ball, and they would just toss it up 10 feet in the air, and he would somehow come down with it every time. And it's something that, as a coach, Mello had said that, you know, I had never had to simulate anything like that before, but that's just the rare case of Caden saw doubles, saw triples. He saw everything defensively across the season, and it seemed like he rose to the occasion. And the scariest part about Perry is that you watch him play, and there's still parts of his game where you're like, he is not tapped all of his potential yet. He's still growing. He's still improving, and he's going to be a guy that will be, you know, a top 3 player, top 2 player potentially in the state next year.
Yeah, I mean, the fastest improving player I saw in the whole state. I watched him early in a head-to-head matchup against Jackson Grant at Olympia. Fortunately, he was in foul trouble, but you could just watch in certain possessions. And this is a very skilled Division I 6'10 guy. And when they would both elevate, when he would turn around and do a spin move in the lane and an 7 or 8 footer, he was a good, you know, oh, I'd say he was a good foot taller. I mean, that's how much athletic ability, that's how much vertical jump this young man has. And you know, watching him sort of bits and pieces later in the year, you could just see the improvement in his offensive skill set with his outside shot, or, you know, his shooting form on some of these really, you know, that, like I said, the spin move in the lane or the fall away baseline jumper. I mean, he's just, he's come on so quickly. It is, I mean, I am, there is nobody in the state I'm more looking forward to seeing next year after another summer of growth than Caden Perry at Battleground. And by the way, if you ever talk to him, I mean, he's just a sweetheart of a guy. I mean, you get him off the court, he's just a sweetheart. I just love talking to him. Yeah, I mean, Manny's, you know, he's got a gem there. It's going to be fun. And I like Tanner Toulson a lot.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, you're really splitting hairs. And we were really, really splitting hairs trying to differentiate these two players that have wildly different games, pretty similar personalities, killer instincts on the basketball court. So, but, you know, we gave Perry the edge here in this total season deal.
So I'm gonna match you. I'm gonna kind of lasso to Kinko 4A, the best two players in Kinko 4A together, so we can get caught up as my number four and number three. And at number four, I had Keely Burton Oliver, the 6'3" center who's going to Arizona State, and probably one of the more unique skill sets in the fact that she was such a vicious rebounder, and yet one of the best 3-point shooters in the state. I mean, she wasn't a traditional post. She could play like a wing if she wanted to, but yet if she wanted to play with power and go on the inside, she could back you down, and she was a great rebounder. I mean, her numbers, she was basically a 20 and 15 type player for Eastlake, which, you know, didn't really get the guard play to put itself in a position to defend its 4A state title this year. You know, they kind of had, it was just basically a lot of Keely and Haley Heward, and you know, but that didn't stop Keely having a really good individual season. Really like her game. She's gonna be a really solid player in the Pac-12. But she didn't win the MVP. That went to Mia Hughes. And again, I've said this for 3 years, without a question, my favorite player in the state of Washington, girl or boy to watch, and it has everything to do with work rate. I kind of had the same feeling with a young lady at Linwood a few years ago who's had a pretty decent, okay career. I say that sort of facetiously at Oregon State, and that's Michaela Pivik. And her work rate and her ability to understand angles as somebody that's not necessarily the prototypical size of a four, of a power forward or a pivot, but she understands, she beats bigger girls with her work rate and her ability to see the ball and just understand the angles of basketball. She was the Kinko MVP. She had her best games in the most important games of the year. You know, I mean, I'm sure it breaks their heart. I mean, Woodinville was undefeated all the way to the end and didn't get it done this year, losing to Central Valley in the 4A championship game. And that's the second time in Mia's 3 years that she's lost in the state championship game to the same team. But I tell you, this is just going to fuel her fire for next year. You know, I've often said this on podcasts and to other coaches. You know, if there's a God, I would love to see her grow 3 or 4 inches because, to me, she's a Division I basketball player who just doesn't have Division I size for the position that best fits her.
Love it, love it. Okay, jumping into these last three, I'm going to loop these three together. I'm bucking our trend again a little bit here, but these final three guys, to me, we're splitting hairs just because of the talent level and the output this season. Number three, Mount Si, Jabe Mullins. St. Mary's commit, he's likely the state's best passer, and you know, he can do a bit of everything. And you saw it happen, the way he controlled the game, played off the ball, like I mentioned earlier, a lot, but he'll be a point guard in college. And what really impressed me about him and his tournament MVP run as Mount Si won the 4A state title was just the poise. It's like he was so steady and he never forced anything. In the state semifinals, they played Glacier Peak, and you know, Jabe wasn't really scoring the ball. They have other guys that can do that. They don't necessarily need him to go off. You know, he certainly is capable. He can score at all three levels. He can really get up and throw down. He can shoot the three. But you know, Jabe had, you know, they had a really good game from their center, Hayden Curtis, and Jabe only had 6 points. But guess what? He had 14 assists, and 8 rebounds. And if they wouldn't have had that first round bye, he would have easily broken the all tournament assist record at the 4A level. So Jabe Mullins is a guy that, as solid as a basketball player as there is across the state, and I'm really excited to see him play at St. Mary's because he seems like he'd be a really good fit down there. Number two, Tari Eason at Garfield. He was our all-class state player of the year. He had a fantastic senior season. Cincinnati signee transferred back to Garfield from Federal Way, where he spent 1 year playing with Jaden McDaniels. He returns as at the same time Brandon Roy returns as head coach, and really separated himself in the state tournament. 22.3 points, 15.7 rebounds a game in the state tournament, and led Garfield to a convincing state title. He was on the just kind of barely in the rotation on the bench 2 years ago when Garfield won state, and that really goes to show his growth. He was hitting threes. He's a 6'8" forward who can probably play a stretch four. I'm assuming what he'll play in college. But you know, he was taking the ball up the court and hitting threes. He beat two quarter buzzers in the state title game with contested threes, and really an impressive run by Tari. Number one has to go to Paolo Banchero, the forward at O'Day, one of the nation's top recruits, arguably the top recruit in the class of 2021. When you look back in the history of Seattle high school basketball, Washington high school basketball, and there's certain basketball players that you look back on now and say, where were you when he was in high school? Did you see him play? I think of Jamal Crawford. You think of Nate Robinson, you think of Brandon Roy, Isaiah Thomas, just to name a few. And Paolo Banchero is in that company at this point, and he's only a junior. He's 6'10", he was averaged 23-11, 4 assists, 2 blocks. He can score at all three levels. He can defend, like, he can really defend. He sent a couple balls into the stands in the state tournament, and he's just a walking highlight. Although O'Day fell flat in the state finals, the body of work that Banchero put together really separated him as the top player in the state this season.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. He is one of those type of players that, you know, your grandkids will ask you, hey, you're a sports writer and covered high school basketball. Do you remember watching Paolo Banchero play? I mean, he's one of those types. You know, I've been asked this a lot over 25 years of sports writing, and you know, who is the best in-state player you've ever seen? And it took one game for me to see, Michael Porter Jr. play at Nathan Hale when he came in for his senior year. It took one game in the Tacoma Dome. That's all it took for me to say that is the best, most well-rounded basketball player, most skilled basketball player I have ever seen in this state. And this is the young man that's right now. To me, it's made me pause on it. I mean, he is that a complete basketball player, and the difference is he can play with the level of power that Michael Porter Jr. can't, and yet he is as well-rounded on both ends as Michael Porter Jr. is. We are so lucky to get to watch this, to watch Paolo Banchero play in Washington, and to think that we get to see him for one more year and see what step can he take as a senior. It's going to be a lot of fun. We talked about some of these other players that you have in your top 10 as juniors. It's going to be so much fun to watch Paolo and Caden and Degenhart. I mean, some of these juniors that are, and they're big guys. I mean, they're guys that, you don't sit to see a group of front court 6'7", 6'8", 6'10" guys that are inside outside guys like this very often. Jackson Grant being another one. I mean, four guys like that we get to watch next year as seniors. You know, we're gonna have this conversation next year, Andy. Is this as good a collection of, you know, wing, stretch four, pivot guys as we've ever seen in the state? And to have them be able to go through another summer of development and get to come back for their seniors, it makes it real exciting for high school basketball fans around the state.
Yeah, and as we put a bow on this list on the boys' side, six of these 10 players that I named are coming back. So that just, it's, you look around the state and it's going to be a really exciting summer following, you know, how these guys progress this summer, their profiles from a recruiting standpoint. There's going to be a long runway up to next year of hype for this class.
Absolutely. It could be the best class that's ever come out of the state of Washington, but let's kind of reserve that for next year. You know, getting to watch these guys as seniors.
Come on. It's still March. That's another podcast.
Amen. Well, my top two, it's good because I can kind of pair these in the same conversation because they're pretty good friends. They're both from Eastern Washington. At number two, it's our 3A player of the year, Jada Noble from Mount Spokane. I list her as a small forward. She can play wherever she wants. She can play a little point. She can play shooting guard. She can play the power forward. She's your version of Jade Mullins. She's just that. I mean, she's got a smoothness and complete nature to her game that you just don't see all that often. It's just a comfort and a confidence to do everything and not have to dominate the stat sheet. Like, you could look at her numbers and go, really? Number two player in the state is Jada Noble? I mean, you have girls that score 25, 28, 30 points a game, and Jada Noble is your number two player in the state? If you watch her play on both ends, these top two players I have are the most complete players on both ends, and to me, it's not even close. I mean, if you need Jada Noble to score, she'll score. She might be the best rebounding guard in the state. Oh, by the way, you're not going to score on me. She'll defend the best player 1 through 5. She's going to the University of Washington. She understands team basketball. If I have a little bit of a nitpick, is maybe she should be a little more selfish because she's that good. But she chooses, you know, she picks her spots on when it's her time to go out and get a win or get her team back in a game. So I have Jada Noble at number two, and then, you know, number one. I mean, what hasn't she done except win a state championship? And she tried. She got the 3 1A championship games in her career.
Who could this be?
I don't know. Be? I mean, you know, I mean, hey, what more can you say about Haley Van Lith as a point guard? I'm talking about, is she the best athlete that's ever played point guard that I've ever seen? No, she's not. She doesn't have a quickness of a Sheila Lambert. I don't think she's a Joyce Walker type. But her ability to wiggle out of any junk or orthodox defense, a double team, a triple team, her ability, her skill, her ability to handle the ball, her strength to split double teams. I mean, she just knows what you're going to do before you do it. And then she kind of makes you look bad. I mean, it's just, it would be a frustrating player to try and have to stop. I mean, she's so strong and so skilled. And oh, by the way, she's going to leave as the state's all-time leading scorer at 2,994 points. And quite frankly, you could argue that she could have been a more selfish player. I mean, if she'd have been like, I don't know, if she'd have taken 30 or 35 shots a game, she could have probably had 3,500 points if she really wanted to. But that's the really good thing about Haley Van Lith, is that she was a good teammate. She trusted her teammates. She didn't feel like she had to do it all the time. She knew when to acquiesce, and she knew when to try and take over. And there's a part of me that feels really badly for her that she didn't get that state championship in her career. But I mean, look at the three teams that she lost to. You know, she lost to Linden Christian twice, and she lost to a really good LaSalle team in the state semifinals the last 3 years. I mean, these are teams that would have competed really well at the 4A, 3A level, and it just so happens that they came along at the same time as Haley and Kashmir did. So Haley Van Lith is my number one. I think I would have gotten a lot of hate mail if I didn't have her number one, but quite frankly, she was the no-brainer from start to finish. She was just a beast to watch, and now she's heading off to Louisville to do some great things.
Now, all your hate mail would have come from me.
Well, I get enough email from you anyway about all the poor decisions I make. So, I mean, you know, what's the difference? I'm glad I was able to make a decision that actually pleased you.
Yeah, no kidding. So real quickly, let's just run down Is there anyone that missed the cut on your top 50 or your even your top 10? I mean, we're going to have 50 names. We didn't go through all 50, but there's so many players, and it just is so hard to do these lists just because you have to leave off players who have very strong cases to be on this list off the list. Anyone that missed the cut that stands out to you that you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, real quick? I mean, I don't want to go as deep as 50 because we could have done a top 75 like we said before, and it would have been a pretty, you know, it would have been a pretty easy job. There are so many good players. But, I mean, I look at some of the players I had in the 11 through 15, 16 range. They could have easily been top 10 players. I mean, Maisie Burnham, the two, you know, you don't see a 2B player of her size and strength come across too often. But the 2B player of the year led Liberty at Spangled to a state championship. She's going to Eastern Washington for a reason. She's good. And she's got a heck of a basketball genealogy with her mom and dad being small school stars as well. Malia Samuels, I mean, we've talked about her. She's probably the top ninth grader in the state. The point guard from Eastside Catholic, the Metro League regular season player of the year ahead of Delia Daniels and Megan Fiso and some of these other really talented players. You know, her ability to stop, start, and cut for a ninth grader is, it's just mind-blowing. I mean, she plays with such a maturity. But, you know, Tyler McClemick-Call, as good a scorer as you're going to find in Steve. Veronica Sheffy, who I think is the most improved player in the state, the point guard from Woodinville, who I think is going to be just a bear to deal with the next couple of years. And then the 2A player of the year at Clarkson, who's only a junior, Ashlyn Wallace, is another really good, determined scoring point guard. So there's a lot of those young ladies that could have easily been in the top 10, but, you know, I can only fit 10 and 10. To try and fit 16 and 10 just wouldn't look right, would it? I just have to start putting letters and decimals and stuff into my top 10, and nobody wants that.
No, I can assure you they don't want it out of me either. But my toughest decisions came to teams that were really balanced, either had a lot of talent or were really balanced, or both. And there's a case that you can make for a Central Valley team that had, like, you know, they made the 4A state championship game, had a really impressive run, and was just a market consistency throughout the whole season. You could have made a case for like five of their players. We had I ended up going with two of them. Gavin Gilstrap was an absolute load. He was somewhere in the 30s. He's their 6'10 center. And then the guy that landed the plane, the one that really was the steady presence, was Jay Simmons. And he, whatever your idea of a flashy player is, he's the exact opposite. He really takes care of the ball, very capable on both ends of the floor, and he was kind of their motor at times. But, you know, Dylan Darling was tremendous throughout the season, especially down the stretch as a disruptive defender. You know, Noah Sanders, he led the Bears in scoring in their biggest win of the season over previously undefeated Union. There's just several players on that team that you know, we had to take a hard look at, and it's just really tough when you're trying to squeeze 50 players into a list like this. And there's just a lot of players at smaller schools too. But the toughest part for me, I think, was the injury default, because you have players like Mitchell Saxon at Ingram, who's the St. Mary's commit. We just didn't get to see much of because he was hurt for most of the year. You have Brad Lackey at Union, whose season was cut short with a knee injury. Kobe Young at Chiawana, who's a fantastic athlete, two-sport athlete, who came late in the season. And then, Bryson Metz at Kings Way, which, you know, there's a reasonable argument to be made that he played enough of the season and came back from a broken foot to play in the state tournament. Those are all guys I would have loved to see in there, as well as Maui Zay, who didn't really play all year because of his eligibility case that he'd been fighting. Another guy that could have made Ingram really good. So those are some of the guys off the top of my head.
Well, I think you said something. We could certainly, if we're going to crack into the top 50 of high school, sports writers, you probably picked a couple things that we probably need to do next year, pal. We probably need to get to more small schools. And we probably need to get to Central Valley. We probably need to make a weekend trip and go watch Central Valley play in person before they head to Tacoma. I mean, both. You mentioned the boys team and the great year and the great run that they had, and some of the players that you wish you had seen earlier. And it's the same way with on the girls' side with MJ Bruno, Peyton Howard. It would have been fun to watch them. They play a style of basketball that I really like. I like good defensive basketball. I like people that get into your grill and play with a lot of toughness and a lot of energy. And that's a, you know, that's a team that I would have liked to have seen earlier play to get a better gauge. So maybe we need to make a trip to Spokane next year, and then, you know, we'll kidnap our buddy Dan Dickow, and we'll sit him down right in between us and watch a few CV games next year.
Yeah, until then, I mean, keep shouting us out on local TV. So, but until then, scorebooklive.com/Washington is your home for high school sports. Even now, when high school sports have come to a halt, we are still going to churn out content on a daily, weekly basis, including this very podcast, which you can subscribe to for daily interviews from Dan Dickow. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play are a couple examples. Thank you for tuning in, Todd. Great to do this with you. Loved covering this season, and it's nice to do another thing that just continues to put a bow on it.
Yep, I agree. Andy, it's been a fun first full year of basketball, and I can't wait for year number two and taking some different approaches with things and see if we can get out to see more people, like you said, and you know, get around to different parts of the state that we didn't get to this year. But it's been a fun year talking about basketball with you and Dan, and obviously my colleague Freddie Rico.
More from us soon. Stay safe, social isolate, wash your hands, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks for tuning in.